Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful, gorgeous Thursday morning here on September 5th. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'll be here with you for the next hour. I have a great show planned. My guest today is Barbara Shin. She is the co-owner of Shin Estate Vineyards out on Long Island, an organic, biodynamic vineyard, and I'm really excited to have her on and talk to us more about how they grow their wines in a sustainable manner and tell you all more about that. I also have a great recipe to share with you, but before I get started, I want to talk about some of the things going on. I've been out in my garden for the last couple of days, really excited harvesting so many things that need to be harvested. I had loads of broccoli rabe, tomatoes, cucumbers are finished, and where the cucumbers were, I've just planted some more green beans, and hopefully I'll get those in before the end of fall. I also pulled up my broccoli rabe, chard, and planted more. I've just planted some spinach, some more arugula, some more broccoli rabe, some bok choy for my fall harvest. I still want to get in some more lettuces. And, I also planted carrots. I think I might have time to get another round of carrots in. So anyway, it's been really great being out there in the garden, and I actually had a little inspiration of help, which always helps to go out there. working out in the garden is a wonderful solitary activity, but it's also really nice to do it just with another person. It just makes it a lot of the projects much easier to have that extra set of hands. So anyway, so I've been working out in the garden, and I have a farm-to-table cooking class next week. It's actually a surprise 60th birthday party, which I love doing. You know, people call me up and they want to do a cooking class and give it to their friend as a surprise. So I have a surprise 60th birthday party, 12 women coming over, and we'll harvest some of the vegetables that haven't been harvested yet, and then have a little cooking class, and we'll sit down to an elegant dinner party. And so that's really always a fun thing to do. So I want to share with you a lot of events that are going on in the area, and hopefully you can join us for some of them, or look up some other events that are similar in your area. Around this time of year, in the fall, you'll start finding lots of honey festivals as the bees are busy making their honey. Speaking of bees making honey, our beehives are doing great. We have three beehives, actually. We started with two beehives, and then we thought we lost a queen. So we got another queen, and turns out we found the queen. It was never lost. So anyway, we divided one of the hives, so we now have three hives, and they're all doing great. So that's really exciting. We're hoping that they go into the winter strong with at least, you know, 75 to 100 pounds of honey in their hive. So as of now, one hive certainly has more than that, and we're waiting to see how the others do. My husband has really been taking on the role of the beekeeper more than I am, I must say, but the bees are really happy. It's really fun to stand by and just watch them zoom in and zoom out. It's like a, you know, a fast-track highway. They just go in and out so fast. It's amazing. And there's so many of them. And it's amazing. Also, we have a pool here, and a lot of people were concerned that, you know, putting in beehives when you have a pool nearby, that they like the water and that they'd be around the pool bothering people. And I just wanted to let people know that that has not been the case at all. The bees have totally stayed away. I have no more bees when you're lying around the pool than I had in years past. So I'm glad that didn't end up being a problem. And, you know, the bees are really entertaining for everybody, so we've really enjoyed having them. So anyway, there is a New York City annual, third annual honeybee festival, and that is on September 7th. And there's going to be vendors from, you know, all over the local area selling their honey and their honey-inspired desserts and products like beeswax candles and cosmetics, and bee-inspired silkscreen T-shirts. It's going to be kid-friendly activities, a movie screening on the beach, observational beehives and intro classes. So it should be really a great event. That's this Saturday, September 7th, on the boardwalk at Rockaway Beach at 86th Street. So I hope you can make it. Later in the month, the Long Island Beekeeping Association is having their festival, and that's October 20th. And as we get closer to that date, I'll give you more information about that. This next Tuesday, September 11th, actually next Wednesday, September 11th, at 7:30, Slow Food Huntington, along with the Cinema Arts Center, are co-sponsoring a documentary film called Spinning Plates, which is a great documentary film about three very different restaurants. But the one thing they have in common is that they all are bringing their love and passion of food and people together. And it's a great movie, and Joseph Levy, the director and producer, will be joining us via Skype, and then there will be a reception following the screening. So if you can make it to that, September 11th at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington, we'll be there. Slow Food Huntington is also having their monthly board meeting, which is open to everybody, on September 12th. And that is, you know, a time to just come down. If you live locally to the not just Huntington, but we really cover from Queens all the way out towards Southampton. There's also a Slow Food East End if you're living out in the Hamptons. But we're really on the Middle Island local Slow Food chapter. And we'd love to hear from people as to how they would like to see this chapter move forward and what we can do to meet everybody's needs. So if you want to get involved, we'd love to have you. Please come down to the Cinema Arts Center. They have a Sky Cafe there that also has an outdoor garden area. And if it's nice weather, we meet outside. Otherwise, we're inside. Also on September 12th, if you're in New York City and have no intention of coming out to our meeting, you can go to a Slow Food New York City event. And they are sponsoring Sherry Brooks, who is an author and preserver. And she's going to be doing a demonstration of preserving savory reduction sauce and talking about her new book. And that is going to take place at the Institute of Culinary Education on 50 West 23rd Street at 6:30 p.m. on September 12th. On the 19th, Food Waste Free New York City is having the event. It's hosted by Food Tank, which is a great new nonprofit organization. And that's from 5:30 to 7:30 on September 19th. And that's a special evening where they're bringing together many people in the New York City food movement. Jen Chapin will be the singer, songwriter, musical guest. And then there's going to be lots of different speakers talking about our food system. So if you're interested in our food system, which I know most of you listening to this show are, that's September 19th in the city. On the 21st to 22nd is the 31st Annual Queens County Fair. And that happens in Floral Park, and that's a great traditional old country farm fair, complete with livestock competitions and produce and hay rides. So if you'd like to come to that, it's $8 for adults, $5 for children. Great event. October 2nd is the annual Just Food, Let Us Eat Local event, and that's an annual food tasting event from 7 to 10 at the Altman Building in the city. And you can find out more information on the Just Food website or on my website. But it's a fundraiser. Ticket prices are a little hefty, but it's a really good cause. So come on out to that. On October 4th is the Evidence-Based Natural Integrative Medicine Symposium that's happening out at the Stony Brook University Southampton campus. And that is going to be a great event. October 5th is a Harvest Fest up at Stone Barns. It's their 10th annual celebration and fundraiser. That's all day on October 5th. You can find out more information also on the Stone Barns website or on my website. For those of you who don't know, my website is ieatgreen.com. And if you want to send any questions directly to me, it's bhavani at ieatgreen.com. On October 13th, Slow Food Huntington is sponsoring another film called Symphony of the Soil. And that's a incredible exploration of the miraculous substance of soil and everything about it. Who you know, what is alive in the soil, you know, how the atmosphere and the plants affect the soil, and also our misuse of the soil in agriculture and deforestation and development and what we can do about it. So it's filmed on four continents featuring esteemed scientists and working farmers and ranchers. And it's an intriguing presentation that highlights possibilities of healthy soil creating healthy plants, creating healthy humans living on a healthy planet. So it's really optimistic and has a lot of, you know, has a really good feel to it. So if you can come to that, that is on October 13th. It's during the day, and we also will have a reception following that. On October 17th, I am doing a cooking demo at the Floral Park Public Library, and that's from 7 to 8:30, and that should be a really great demonstration. And there's more and more, but I'm going to save some of them for next week because I do want to share with you this recipe, and I want to have time to, for my guests to come on. So, again, if you missed any of these upcoming events, you can always find them on my website at ieatgreen.com. Okay, so the recipe this week, I'm usually sharing with you savory food because that's mostly what I do, but now and then I do baking. And because I'm usually baking when I'm having a crowd over, I tend to bake a lot of gluten-free and vegan desserts because that way I can make one dessert and everybody can eat it, as opposed to making many different ones. So this is a gluten-free vegan banana custard cake with a chocolate mousse frosting. So I start with 4 cups of gluten-free flour mix, and I use a variety. Trader Joe's has a good gluten-free flour. Someone just told me about a new one that I haven't actually tried yet called Cup for Cup gluten-free flour. I like Pamela's. She has 2 different gluten-free flours. One is for pancakes and cake baking. The other one is more for bread. I use a mixture of that. So you can use whatever ones you have, whatever ones you like, but 4 cups of gluten-free flour mix. Then 1.5 cups of shredded unsweetened coconut, 1 tablespoon baking powder, 2 teaspoons baking soda, 1 teaspoon salt, 1 cup of maple syrup, 1/2 cup coconut oil, 1 can coconut milk, 1/2 cup of water, 1 tablespoon vanilla extract, 1 teaspoon apple cider vinegar, and 8 very ripe bananas. And I may have told you in the past, I keep my bananas, once they start getting really ripe, instead of throwing them out, I don't like eating them when they're really ripe. So instead of throwing them out, I just stick them right away into the freezer before they get black. And that way I have very ripe bananas in the freezer for whenever I decide to make a banana cake. And very often my banana cake making is inspired by how many bananas I have in the freezer, as it was this past weekend. So to make the cake, in a large bowl you can combine the dry ingredients, which is the gluten-free flour, the coconut, the baking powder, the baking soda, and the salt. And then in the food processor, you're going to pulse the bananas until they're smooth. Then you're going to add the coconut oil, the maple syrup, the coconut milk, the water, the apple cider vinegar, and the vanilla. And you're going to pulse that some more until it's thoroughly mixed through. Scrape down the sides of the processor with a rubber spatula and continue processing until it's all mixed up. And then using a large whisk, you're going to take the, and a spatula, of course, take the wet ingredients out of the food processor and mix them into the dry ingredients in your big bowl and mix them really well using the whisk until it's fully incorporated. You don't need to overmix it, but you do need to make sure that all the dry ingredients is incorporated into the wet. And then I greased a round 12-inch round baking pan so that I would have a nice large cake. If you want to make a sheet cake, you can do that too, you know, if what you have is like a lasagna pan. Glass is preferable. But you can use that. And then I line the bottom of the cake pan with a piece of parchment paper, and that just makes removing the cake so much easier. And then spray some oil all around the bottom of the pan on top of the parchment paper and the sides really well. Then you're going to fill the pan with the batter, and you're going to bake it for 50 to 60 minutes until a toothpick or a knife inserted into the middle comes out clean. And, when it came out, it was really fluffy, and then, of course, it shrunk down a little bit. But it tasted great, and so that was okay. For the frosting, this is a mousse frosting, and I used 2 cakes of soft tofu. Clean out the food processor first, because you're going to do this in the food processor. 2 cakes of soft tofu, 2 cups of vegan organic chocolate chips that you can melt over a double boiler, or if you use a microwave, you can do it in the microwave too, but you just need to melt those chocolate chips. 1/2 cup of maple syrup and 1 teaspoon of vanilla. And you're going to put all that into the food processor, and you're going to process it until it's smooth. And then that is the frosting right there. And so when my cake cools, I slice it horizontally down the middle. And I have a really great big round spatula that my husband bought me that you can use for pizzas or whatever. And I use that to get in between the 2 layers and lift the top layer off. If you don't have that, you can use a round piece of cardboard, or anything flat that you can stick between the 2 layers to remove the top layer off. You can even use 2 spatulas, 1 in each hand, and lift it off. It's a little bit more challenging, but it can be done that way too. And so you separate the 2 layers, put 1/2 of the chocolate mousse filling in on top of the bottom layer, put the top layer back on top of the bottom layer, and then continue frosting the rest of the cake. Make sure to get it all around the sides. And then I actually decorated with some fresh raspberries around the edge. And, of course, later in the evening I had some birthday candles on this cake because we were celebrating many Virgo birthdays last weekend. But it was great. Everybody loved it. The cake, like I said, it fell down a little bit, so that's why I'm calling it a custard cake, because it wasn't a light, flaky cake. It was more custardy, but it was delicious, and everybody loved it. So that is what I am sharing with you today. And now I can invite on my guest, Barbara Shin. And as I said before, Barbara Shin is the co-owner of Shin Estate Vineyards, and she runs it along with her husband, David Page. And it's located on Long Island in Matatuck, New York. And that's a 20-acre vineyard. And they started it in 2000. And it's farmed holistically, employing sustainable, organic, and biodynamic techniques. Barbara is a viticulturist and the soil agronomist of the estate, and is credited for bringing a natural approach to wine growing practices on Long Island. And most recently, this is really exciting, Barbara has developed the standards for the Long Island Sustainable Wine Growing Program, which is the first third-party certified sustainable wine growing program on the East Coast. And so that's really exciting to know that there's going to be a third-party certification process that winemaking can go through, so we know that it's really of top quality. So that's really great. So Barbara, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me.
So welcome, and thank you for joining us. It was such a pleasure to visit you and meet you for the first time earlier this summer when I went out to the North Fork and explored all that the North Fork has to offer. And I have to say my visit to your estate was the highlight.
It's so wonderful being able to have a very small public space at the winery, at the vineyard, to welcome our guests who are coming to taste wine. And we get to meet so many interesting people, and it has just, I learn from our guests all of the time. They come in with all kinds of great information, so happy to teach me something about maybe they're farmers, and maybe they have a herd of cows, or maybe they are someone very similar to you that's just trying to spread the word. And that's how you and I met, which is so great. And now
I know, and I loved learning about your history too, which I'd like to ask you to share with people, because you were not always a wine grower. So I'd like you lived in the city and you did food like I do. So why don't you share a little bit about your history and how you founded the vineyard.
Absolutely. And even before we start with that, I have to say that the soil film that you mentioned at the beginning of your program sounds so fascinating, so I hope there's a great turnout for that.
Symphony
and also,
of the Soil.
David and I are also going to be at the Just I think it's called Just Eat Local or Just Food,
that
you were talking about, the one at the Altman Building in New York. And it is a great event. We've done it for, this will be our third year, I think.
That
and
was the first time I tried your wine, actually, was at the Just Food event.
That's great. And one thing we love about that event is that no one ever runs out of food and no one ever runs out of wine, and the crowd is so very food and wine savvy. And, yes, the ticket prices are a little bit higher, but that actually keeps the crowd kind of interesting because they're coming for the food, they're coming for the wine, and then it's a beautiful space, too. So,
yeah.
Anyway, yes, so David's and my history. David grew up in Wisconsin, and I grew up in Ohio, so we're both Midwesterners. And we both found our way to the Bay Area, in the San Francisco Bay Area in California, and we did not know each other upon arriving, but we banged into each other one day after both of us had lived there for a while, and he was a sous chef at the time, and I had just graduated from California School for the Arts with my master's degree, and was becoming very immersed in the San Francisco art scene. And he was kind of wanting to move away from the area and discover some other part of America, and so was I. So after dating for quite a while, we decided to move to New York City. And David wanted to open a restaurant, and I thought, oh, my goodness gracious me, here we go. I'm going to be a waitress the rest of my life.
Uh-huh.
And so to kind of make a short story out of that, we opened Home Restaurant in the West Village, and owned that restaurant for 15 years, and that restaurant was very, very good to us. And over those 15 years, we also opened a little tap room called Drover's Tap Room, which is even more casual than Home, and had a nice little tavern, and also started a catering company and takeout shop, prepared food shop. And when all of that was happening and businesses were incredibly profitable, I just thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown. Here I was, having a staff of 100 and living in an asphalt city. And we said, you know what? It's time to change our lives. And we both decided it was time to get back to the earth. And we were very ready for it. In the meantime, we had discovered the North Fork of Long Island, where there's thousands of acres of grapes being grown. And we had become friends with very many winemakers and winery owners because we are wine list at both of our establishments was an all local list, actually. So we were serving New York wines and other East Coast wines. And we thought, wow, buying some land and planting a vineyard, wouldn't that be amazing? So that is how we moved to Matatuck on the North Fork of Long Island. And very soon we had purchased 10 acres of what had been planted in corn and rye for generations, and that was in 1998. And in the year 2000, we planted our first 9 acres of vines, and we're completely planted now with 20 acres of vines, and we're making
so
all of the
did
wine.
Did you buy
there.
20 more acres, or you?
It was a 20-acre parcel of land, and we planted 9 acres right away, and then over the next several years, we finished the planting. So we're fully planted at 20 acres now.
Wow. That's
yeah,
amazing.
It's quite one of those, you know, American dream stories. We are self-sustaining there. We have a very small staff. We all work very many different jobs on the property. I'm pretty sure everyone is very happy with their job there. We have the best staff we've ever had, and we're very proud of what we do.
Yeah. It's an amazing operation. Now, do you do tours? I mean, I actually didn't get to, I got there late, so I didn't get to really go out into the vineyard and see, you know, the grapes growing and stuff. Do you give tours of the vineyard itself?
We do. There's a couple tours that we do on the weekends, on Saturdays and Sundays. I do a guided tour of the vineyard at 1:30. And that lasts for about 40 minutes, and we talk about our sustainable wine growing and the organic methods we apply in the vineyards, what biodynamic wine growing is, and usually it's everyone's first introduction to biodynamic farming and biodynamic wine growing, so it's a really great learning experience for everybody. We have a lot of fun out there. It's definitely an educational tour, but everyone's very relaxed, and everyone gets to ask questions. And then at 2:30, my husband David does a winery and barrel cellar tour, and that lasts a solid hour. And one thing I think is interesting is that we have people come in 7 days a week into the tasting room and say, oh, can I do a tour? So for the past 2 years, we've allowed people to do a self-guided tour, and that is really amazing. We've set the vineyard up almost like a park service guided tour, and you come into the tasting room, and you pick up a booklet, and there's little stations with markers throughout the vineyard, and you learn about our biodynamic vegetable garden and how plants photosynthesize and what the root system is doing at any moment in time with nutrient take-up, and all about beneficial bug habitat and biodiversity. And people come back, and they are just amazed at how much fun they had out in the vineyard. And that's about a 20-minute walk any day of the week.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I didn't know that when I was there. So
yeah.
I'm going to come back for sure.
And
to
you know,
do that.
Look, when we first started growing wine there, vineyards were very, very sort of off limits to customers. And there was never even a vineyard tour given. And David and I were doing the very first vineyard tours out there. It was always just sort of a winery tour where it was like, okay, here's the tank and there's the barrel and that's what you learned. And we're so much about the vineyard. And so our tour was always the vineyard. And now I would say 50% of the wineries out there are giving vineyard tours, and they're introducing people to sustainable wine growing. And the self-guided tour is really a brand new thing for out there. And I have to say, you really have to have a special clientele that comes and respects nature firstly, in order to allow them to be unchaperoned out there in the vineyard. And we're lucky enough to have that type of clientele with us.
Now, when you purchased your land and you said it was already being, it had been farmed before doing corn and what else did you say you were growing there?
Corn and rye and barley. Okay. That was, it had been farmed that way by one particular farming family for almost 150 years.
And were they doing it organically, or did you have to wait, you know, the 7 years or whatever it is to let your...
They were farming conventionally. It was not industrialized farming by any means, because it was only a 20-acre vineyard or a 20-acre farm. But it was farmed conventionally. They were using agricultural, you know, chemicals. They were using man-made fertilizers and fungicides. Corn and rye are pretty low-impact crops on the soil, so we were lucky in that way. But it took us about 3 years to really restore the farm and see it regenerate into, you know, a viable ecosystem again.
Right. So can you share with us what sets your winemaking or wine-growing methods apart from other North Fork wineries? And are there other wineries out there that are, you know, seeing your example and maybe changing over towards more sustainable practices?
Well, you know, quite frankly, when we first started farming wine there, like I said, we planted our first vines in 2000. You know, wineries and vineyard managers didn't really even understand what sustainable wine growing was or sustainable farming. And David and I, being brand new farmers, we had never farmed before, said, well, of course we can do this, because there was nothing telling us that we couldn't, except pretty much everyone that was growing wine out here on the East Coast saying, you know, you do have to use conventional materials.
Right.
Organic materials
don't
work.
There's too much mold. You have to.
Right. There's too much rain. Our soils are too light to hold, you know, organic matter in order to feed our vines naturally. The bugs can't be controlled organically. And we said, you know, let's start chipping away at this. We have to be economically viable, because this is our only source of income. And I think that if we can convert our farm over to living systems and look at our farming as restorative farming and regenerative farming, we're going to give ourselves 10 years to figure out how to do this on the East Coast. And I have to say, we have succeeded. You know, all of the seeding of our vines, so all of our soil work is organic. It's with certified organic material. All of our insect control, it's with the good bugs eating the bad bugs. So it's all with beneficial insects, habitat. And if I do use any materials, they're certified organic materials that are very, very low impact. 90% of anything I put on the vines is with certified organic materials for fungus control. All of our weed control is 100% organic. This was unheard of 10 years ago. It was, you know, commonly held belief that this is absolutely impossible. And to answer the second part of your question, and I'm so happy to answer it in a really positive note, yes, the whole region is changing. There are about half of the vineyards now consider themselves to be participating in sustainable wine growing. And
really?
The program, yes.
That's fascinating, because I also know that, you know, I've been committed to eating and drinking organic for years. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I was not buying most of organic Long Island wine because nobody was doing it organically. And
well, there still is no one there that is certified organic, but sustainable wine growing is, I think, a really, really solid first step.
Mm-hmm.
And we need science to help us with figuring out how to grow wine organically all up and down the East Coast, which includes all the way from up in Canada all the way down to, you know, North and South Carolina. So I believe that in the next 5 to 10 years, you know, this paradigm change that's happening is going to come to fruition. You will see certified organic vineyards. So right now, you know, we consider ourselves to be a sustainably farmed vineyard, and we're seeing, like I said, almost 50% of the vineyards out here on the North Fork and in the Hampton ADA participating in this new program that I have helped develop along with three other wine-growing friends of mine. And like you were saying, it's third-party certified. There's limitations on non-organic materials that you can use in the vineyard. We are addressing our water table because we are a maritime environment. We're surrounded by water, and it's a very fragile ecosystem. And part of our program is keeping biological set-asides of, you know, untouched nature on our farms and allowing biodiversity to happen, which then means that we have great bug habitat, and like I said, the bug-eating bugs are going to go eat the bad bugs that are eating our plants. And it's the second year of this program, and I am seeing huge visual changes in the vineyards out here at this point. We're just driving by. You can see it.
What do you see differently when you say that? What do you mean by that?
We're seeing weeds, and many gardeners, even such as yourself, when you say the word weed, you think, oh no, weeds. But weeds are part of the natural biodiversity of this earth, and we are finding that in East Coast vineyards, weeds are a very, very beneficial aspect to our wine growing. They're very opportunistic. They drink up rainwater before it gets to the vines. Vines really like to have dry feet. They attract natural insect habitat, and we have kind of touched on that a couple of times. there also is a method for us to grow weeds right underneath the trellis of the vine, which means the weeds are growing throughout the entire vineyard. So it's a natural meadow ecosystem. So we're bringing natural ecosystem, natural wildlife habitat back onto our vineyards. So in that sense, when I've spoken about restorative farming, maybe you can kind of start to understand what I'm talking about. Is we welcome wildlife back onto our farms. We're bringing our farms back to a more natural habitat. So we're restoring what was once very manipulated farmland back to a more natural ecosystem. And when you drive by, you see weeds in vineyards. And to me, that's a beautiful thing. And it's just a matter of adjusting what you think beautiful nature is.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's also funny when you know, go and learn about foraging more, and you find out that so many of the things that you're pulling as weeds are eaten in so many parts of the world, and they're very nutritious. They haven't been manipulated and, you know, crossbred to, you know, have milder flavor. They're more vibrant and higher nutrient values in a lot of
right.
them.
Right, so,
you know,
so
dandelion green,
that.
Purslane, you know, all those things that we pull as weeds
right.
are really great to eat.
So think about that, and think about all of our wild pollinators and all of our insects that want to eat this natural meadow. Right? And so
right.
we're providing this incredible food source for our natural, for our honeybee population and also our wild bee population. And also most beneficial insects rely on pollen as a food source and as an egg-laying medium. A lot of beneficial insects, a lot of bug-eating bugs, lay their eggs on pollen granules. So you have to let these weeds blossom, and you have to let them produce their pollen before you would go in and mow them. So we're seeing that we can't interrupt these natural cycles in our vineyards, that if we let these weeds grow and we also let them get to the point where they're flowering and producing pollen, then we are allowing this natural habitat and this natural cycle and natural rhythms to happen in our vineyards. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like you're growing an entirely other crop than just grapes.
That's such a great philosophy. I love it.
It does. It starts to get into the philosophical nature of wine growing. And when you can get to that next level, you start making all of these other decisions about how you're caring for the earth and how you're stewarding your land. And that goes back to one of the biggest points of sustainable farming, is your job is to steward your land and leave it in better condition for the next generation. So it makes a big, huge, closed circle all the way from that philosophy to how do you make it practically work in your vineyard, and see the whole cycle of allowing weeds to grow, allowing the pollination to happen, allowing your beneficial bug habitat to grow. Therefore, you're not having to use insecticides. Therefore, you're stewarding your land and leaving it in better condition for the next generation. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating. Don't go anywhere. We're going to take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the holistic methods and the biodynamic farming, because that's a new term to many people. And more about other things you do at your farm. So I don't really want to share that with everyone. So everyone, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I'm talking with Barbara Shin from Shin Estate Vineyards. Be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Barbara Shin from Shin Estate Vineyards, and we're talking about her biodynamic, restorative ways of growing her vineyards, or her wines. So, Barbara, are you with me? Great. So can you just share with everybody what you were talking about in your philosophy is really, I think, the philosophy of biodynamics. But I think a lot of people don't know that term. Can you just share with them?
Well, biodynamics was introduced to farming in the 1920s, and it was basically a way for farmers to feel like they didn't have to convert to this new industrial type of farming that was happening with the introduction of chemical agricultural materials onto their farms. And since then, biodynamic farming has come a long way and really taught farmers, including us as wine growers, how to reintroduce natural habitat back onto our farms. So we've spoken a little bit at length about that this morning, but that's what it's about. It's about restorative farming, and it's about understanding that there's unseen systems in nature that even now we don't even understand could be there, that are so important to the natural dynamics of a healthy ecosystem on your land. Mm-hmm. So all of those examples that I gave you help you as a farmer to make decisions on your farm as to when to intervene and when not to intervene. So, for instance, when I talked about our organic soil work, I don't want to interrupt the natural cycles that happen in my soil with the way that my microbes are going to convert everything that's decaying in the soil into plant food. And as gardeners, because you have such a big gardening following on your show, if we use fertilizers, it sort of steps over the process of natural plant food being created by the microbes in your garden or on your farm. So in the spring, I feed my soil. I feed my soil with everything the microbes and the soil animals are going to want to eat, which would be seaweed and fish emulsion and whey that I get from the local dairy that's left over from the cheese making process. I inoculate my soil with more microorganisms, with a liquid compost that's just teeming with microbes. It's called compost tea. And I even use dry materials like peanut shells, which are very, very high in nitrogen, just natural nitrogen, that then decay into the element of nitrogen that the plant roots can take up.
Mm-hmm.
So biodynamics is all about making these choices to not interfere with the natural cycles on your farm.
Mm-hmm.
And it even goes so far as to what you put in your compost pile. You know, I use lots of wood chips in my compost pile, but was it from a tree that fell naturally that my friends that are arborists come and bring me in wood chip form, or was it from a tree that was growing beautifully and someone just decided to cut it down? So I like to use a tree that just fell naturally or a limb that just fell naturally off of a tree. And we take all of that unseen part of nature into consideration when we're bringing things in from the outside onto our farm as far as materials go.
Uh-huh. And do you have a whole compost-making system there, too, or do you let someone else do that and you just get it from them?
Oh, no, I absolutely do all of the composting here on the farm. It's one of my favorite things to do.
You do? Uh-huh.
We build our compost piles in November from all of the seeds and pressings from our wine, and then I'm adding the wood chips. I add horse bedding material from horses that are stabled biologically out here, and we let that compost actually for an entire year. So the compost
uh-huh.
piles that I'm going to be making in November won't be spread until next November. And that allows all the cracking of the soil in the wintertime to happen, and the compost will work its way down into the soil, and the winter snows and rains will help that compost work down into the soil.
Right.
And then in the spring, I feed all of everything that was in that compost, all the microbes, get yet another douse of food in the spring so that there's a big microbe bloom in my vineyard, which then turns into plant food.
Great. That's great. So you and David really have kind of concentrated your expertise in different areas. What do you focus on? What does David focus on?
Well, I'm definitely focused on the vineyards. So my husband, David, does a lot of the winery work along with our winemaker, Patrick Caserta. And that is a whole other sort of thing we can talk about right now. And I know we're starting to run out of time, but everything that I talked about in the vineyard with the considerations of using natural materials in the vineyard and not interrupting natural cycles in the vineyard then gets transferred into the winery. So all of the grapes that we hand harvest and bring into the winery from our vineyard have yeast on them, and they're natural winemaking yeast that has grown in the soil and found its way, migrated its way up onto the outside of our grapes. So we have this beautiful yeast culture that's indigenous to our vineyard, and we allow our fermentations just to spontaneously start with the natural yeast from our vineyard, and we allow them to completely finish the fermentation. And there can be as many as 100 to 150 different winemaking yeasts on the outside of that grape, which adds complexity to our wines and also allows us to not have to buy yeast from a laboratory and inoculate our wine with just a single very strong yeast that would then outcrowd all of these natural yeasts.
Mm-hmm. And the yeasts are like the sulfites that are always added to the wines. Is that what that is?
Well, sulfites is another issue. And, you know, a lot of times grapes will come into a winery, and the first thing a winemaker wants to do is just put some sulfur on the grapes that are in the bins, because it's going to actually dumb down and kill some of the yeast that's on those grapes so that they can inoculate with a laboratory yeast. So everything we do is sort of the exact opposite of what has happened in winemaking over the last 30 to 35 years. You know, using yeast from a laboratory and having different ingredients that people put into wines, all of that's very new, and it's part of industrialized winemaking. And what I think the general public doesn't understand is that this industrial type winemaking is very new to winemaking, as new as 35 years old.
Mm, really?
And winemakers that are coming out of winemaking schools are kind of taught this sort of conventional industrialized winemaking, and it's so wonderful to see a whole new generation of winemakers that wants to go back to these natural methods. And that's what we're doing at Shin Estate Vineyards, is we're allowing this biodiversity to come back into our wines with all of these yeast strains that are fermenting our wines, and you know, allowing our fermentations to be healthy enough that we don't have to feed them with any conventional nutrients. We're allowing the fermentations to continue on their own without intervening or any additives.
So do they have to ferment longer than wines that you would be adding this yeast to?
Not necessarily, but what's really beautiful about it is many times they do. They ferment longer. They, in other words, they ferment more slowly, and you have a much more complex wine because of that. So it's not making wine for the convenience of the winemaker and the convenience of the winery. It's making wine that's healthier for the general public and much more complex and just a much more sound bottle of wine, which is food. Wine is food. Wine is agriculture. Wine growing is farming. I'm growing grapes that I just happen to be fermenting. So I'm a produce grower. And mm-hmm. our wine is a bottle of produce that just happens to be fermented. And it's very important that people either become aware of this or remember this when they're buying a bottle of wine. You want to buy as naturally grown and as naturally fermented bottle of wine as you possibly can.
Right, right. Well, also because wine, grapes, anyway, as far as, you know, the Dirty Dozen list, you know, from the Environmental Working Group, I mean, grapes are some of the most heavily sprayed crops around. So if you're not getting them organic, they're really heavily sprayed. And then when you're making them, concentrating them down into wine, I would think you'd be, if you're not getting a natural wine, you'd be getting a huge concentration of those chemicals and pesticides into the wine, in addition to whatever else they're adding into the wine.
It is a possibility. And then also we have to take into, we have to remember that it's all about our workers, too, about the people that are working in the field. And that's one reason why the industrialized farming of grapes would include table grapes. And that first began to become very prevalent in the American public's eyes with what was happening in California in the Central Valley with people that were working in the vineyards of table grapes. And one big part of sustainable farming is taking care of your workers, whether they're workers on your farm or inside in the winery, or no matter what capacity any of your staff is doing on your farm, is making sure that your workers have a clean, viable environment to work in.
Right, and that they're not also out on the field, they're not ingesting any of the sprays and any of the chemicals that so many farm workers are subjected to.
Oh, I have to say one of the biggest turning points for me was on a very, very hot afternoon years and years ago, I was walking out in the vineyard and I wanted to go down the row that my staff was working on. And, you know, when you're working out in the field, you're covered up for the sun. So you're wearing long sleeves and you're wearing socks and shoes and all that. But it was a really hot day. And as I'm walking down a row of vines, I see a couple tennis shoes underneath the vine and then another pair of tennis shoes. And then on the trellis wire was a pair of socks and their overshirt. And they were out there working in, you know, short sleeves and bare feet. And my vineyard staff felt comfortable enough that they were working in a clean enough vineyard to do that. And I said, wow, I've actually made a real difference because they trust me. Mm-hmm. And they know the materials that we're using are safe for them to be working around, which might not seem like a big deal to people that are listening, but it certainly was when you're thinking about farming and you have the awareness that I do about materials that are used in conventional farming.
Sure. Now, can you explain to me, sometimes I hear somebody say, you know, wine's not vegan or this wine is vegan. What does that mean? What makes a wine vegan or not vegan?
Well, you know, vegans definitely have a concern for that, and it's very simple, and it's not anything that's a big deal. But sometimes when a winemaker decides that they have to clarify a wine, which means that they want the white wine to be really clear, and even perhaps a red wine to have the solids taken out of the red wine, they want the wine to have a little bit more clarity visually to it, you have to filter a wine, or it's also called fining a wine. And one way to do that is that egg whites are used. It's very simple. And so a vegan may not want to have a wine that is fined with egg whites. And that's basically the only concern, is what that is. It's also a material called isinglass, which is part of the fish roe. So that's all it is. Now, those are two very natural products that are used in winemaking, but if you're a vegan and you have those concerns, then that's a really great question to ask. So, yes, our wines are vegan at Shen Estate Vineyards.
Your wines are vegan?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I would think also, you know, if you're making natural wines, you don't worry so much about the it needing to be clear, because I think many people like the sediment
well, that's
in the wines.
Part of the ongoing process is, in natural winemaking, is, you know, how far do you push the visual aspects of the wine? So there's lots of natural white wines that you can buy in certain boutique wine stores now that have not been filtered, and they're cloudy. I would say they're more opalescent than anything, and there's some sediment in those white wines, and people aren't used to seeing that.
Right.
But it's certainly nothing to turn away from, and many red wines now are not filtered either, and you actually, when you hold up a red wine, you know, to the light, you can see that it's fairly cloudy.
Uh-huh.
So it's a great question to ask when you're fining or you are filtering wine. Filtering or fining wine can take out flavor and it can take out color.
Right, right. Yeah, I was just, you know, you don't think of wine, which is made with grapes, as even being an issue if you're vegan. And so I just found that really interesting. You know, just to hear someone say, oh, that wine's vegan, you know. So that was new for me. So one thing I was also impressed about when I was at your vineyard, I saw that you also run an inn, that you actually have accommodations for people. Can you share that
we
with people?
We do. At Shen Estate Vineyards, we have the farmhouse inn, and it's the original homestead on the property that was built in the 1880s, and it's completely restored, all modern amenities. And it's a little four-room inn that guests can come and stay overnight. And we get a great, great group of people checking in and staying with us. It's been a very busy summer, and we're looking at a very busy September coming up here. But we're open year-round, and I have to say, David and I love being innkeepers.
Ah, so is it run like a bed and breakfast?
It is. Our guests get breakfast. We also put wine and cheese out in the living room in the late afternoon, and if our guests are here on the weekends, they can go on one of the vineyard or winery tours that I mentioned, complimentary.
Uh-huh.
And they also receive a complimentary tasting of our wines in the tasting room. So there's a lot of really nice perks. And, of course, the 20 acres of vines are just open to them to
roam. Right.
Yeah.
And it was just, I mean, visually it was just so charming, you know. It was just great. So I hope to take you up on that one of these times for
okay.
sure.
That would be nice.
You know, yeah, it will be really nice when I come back. I'm going to India. I don't know if I mentioned that today on my show. I don't think I did, but I'm going to India later in the month for 3 weeks. And when I come back, maybe I'll come visit you. It'll be really nice.
You'll need a vacation from your vacation, so come and stay with us.
Right, or a night away with my husband anyway. So that would be nice. Everyone, thank you, Barbara, so much for joining us. It's been so informative, and your, you know, estate and what you're doing there in changing the way people grow is really wonderful, impressive, and you're doing really good work for the planet and for all of us, so thank you.
You're welcome, and we love to do what we do, and thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Well, you can tell. It radiates everywhere there, so, and I really felt it when I was there. So thank you. Everyone, you've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network and my guest Barbara Shin from Shin Estate Vineyards. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you again next week. Have a good one. Oh, and Happy New Year to everyone celebrating Rosh Hashanah. Yom Tov, Lashana Tova.